I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Bill Hutchison. He's with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Neither of the Roberts can be here with us speaking of the arts, but we're so glad you're here.
No Bobs, but a Bill.
No Bobs, but a Bill. Billapalooza. Well, okay. It's just one. But what's happening at the animal shelter? What's happening with animals?
We have a lot going on, Mary Charlotte, and I am excited to unveil in properly dramatic fashion something that we're going to be working on starting this year, but really it's going to be a long-term project. And I just love saying the name of it because it's so good. Our executive director came up with it, and it sounds like a sort of a Manhattan Project super spy thing, but really it's going to be one of the best things this community's seen for animals in a long time.
What's it called?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sure you're ready?
I'm beginning to doubt it.
I think you're ready. Project 18.
Oh, so it's about Egypt.
Not quite.
It's about the CCA.
You're so close, but yet so far. Project 18, the way we figure it, we've done a lot of looking at the animals in this community, statistics, and some really profound analysis of trends. We figure that between shelters, sanctuaries, and rescues, and really good owners and in a community that loves its animals, about 82% of the animals in this community are getting their needs met in one way or the other.
Now, wait a minute. Are you counting, like, my dogs?
Absolutely. Okay. Your dogs count as part of the 82%. Of course, your dogs are like in the top 1% of Santa Fe dog families.
I'm not sure they'd agree.
Of course they wouldn't.
They want me to buy a ranch with horses.
Terriers are nothing but complainers.
Can't.
It's in their nature, but that's how you know. They're free to complain. That's their joy.
That's true.
But if 82% of animals are having their needs met, then that means in this community that 18% are not. Now, a community like ours that can get 82% of its animals in pretty good shape, that's a big win. Most communities really struggle to get that far. And frankly, one of the most exciting things about it is when the Santa Fe Animal Shelter was founded in 1939, it was founded in response to the fact that, apologies early morning listeners for this garish detail, but stray dogs were simply shot and dragged to the edge of town. That was animal control in 1939.
Here in Santa Fe? We've come a long way.
So when the White Sisters donated their house in 39 to found a shelter to start trying to meet some of those needs, we've really grown up as a community that loves its animals. But that 18%, you could call 82% a win and pat yourself on the back and stabilize and say, good job, Santa Fe, we've done it. But that still means that 18% of the animals in this community are not getting what they need. And what they need comes in a variety of forms. They need behavioral work to keep the relationship in the family whole. They need spay and neuter services to keep the overpopulation problem from growing. And they need really good placement. They need to find the right home. So that 82%, you know, it's interesting, Mary Charlotte, you were talking before we went on the air about your for-profit early beginnings in another world. How 90% of a job takes half of your time.
Yeah, that's so true. I had a mentor. I started out when I graduated from college. I went into a job in a startup company and really learned a lot about the for-profit sector. And my mentor said, that's just what you said, 90% of a job takes half the time. The last 10% takes the other time. And his attitude was, do the 90% and move on, which for business probably makes sense.
Absolutely.
But when
you're in a nonprofit situation, when you have a mission like ours to work to the benefit of animals, once you nail that first chunk of animals that need the bulk of your time, you don't call that a win. You say our mission dictates that we serve every single animal in this community, and that's really what Project 18 is about. And it's going to be hard won to carve out every percentage point to reach those animals that are not being reached. But I think it's a project that the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and our community is up to.
So how are you doing that?
Mary Charlotte, I am so glad you asked me that. What a brilliant segue. We have a couple of different ways we're doing it. I get really excited talking about this, and I start feeling a little tongue-tied because it's one of the most... I've been at the shelter for almost 8 years now, and it's been one of the most exciting times in my tenure there. I feel more excited every day than I have in a long, long time. One of the ways that we're doing it is our new behavior and training director and what we call the T6. We have 6 certified pet dog trainers from Santa Fe who are working with shelter dogs to come up with a protocol. So when they're in the adoption kennels, they're getting everything they need to become really good, strong members of a home. That has a couple of different aspects to it. Number one, they're happier while they're there. The goal right now is get them out for 3 walks a day. Again, early morning listeners, I apologize for what I'm going to explain to you, but I think you'll get it. So think about the time in your life where you have had to pee the most. You have nothing in your head except the need for relief. So imagine you're a little dog who's relatively well housebroken, or at least in a lovely but small kennel at the shelter waiting for a home. And
high school assembly.
Bingo, exactly. Or perhaps you're on the radio and you've had too much coffee and you can't quite get off to go make a run.
Nope, high school assembly.
Okay, we'll stick with high school assembly. The best thing that we can do for those animals to start working with them behaviorally is get them out 3 times a day for potty breaks. It not only does it help them with house training, it helps them stay calmer in the kennel, which means they present better to potential adopters. We're also working with, we have such an amazing group of volunteers that's completely retraining on how we walk the dogs. So we're walking them on harnesses, which means big dogs, little dogs, hounds, pitties, Rottweilers, German Shepherd mixes, New Mexico Brown dogs. They all learn to walk on a harness, which means they start learning how to walk with a loose leash. So you come in, Mary Charlotte's getting her first dog. She sees this cute New Mexico Brown dog. Rather than being towed around by this dog when you're evaluating whether or not you want to adopt him, he walks on a loose leash. He takes his potty breaks. He's a happy, calm dog. In his head is not the chaos and the maelstrom of frustration that, no matter how nice you make a shelter, is part of shelter life for dogs.
Right.
Hey, Bill, I think you could sell that to Randy Newman. He could make a song out of it.
I'm already humming it in my head, Mary Lynn. You are a genius. Then we can get Pixar to animate the Santa Fe Animal Shelter Project 18, and we are on the way. Every animal will be safe and animated.
Now, why did you mention Randy Newman, Mary Lynn?
Because he's coming to Santa Fe on Monday. He'll be at the Lensic this Monday, March 14th at 7:30 p.m. And we have 1 pair of tickets to give away to the lucky caller, especially if it's a caller that has not won any tickets from us in the past.
Yes, that would be wonderful. New caller, 428-1382. Go to it, Mary Lynn.
And tell Mary Lynn how much you love dogs and cats in the shelter. I'm sure she'll give you extra kisses on the radio.
Yes, exactly. So.
So along with our behavior and training program and the T6 trainers, who are these amazing certified pet dog trainers who are giving up their time to the shelter, Suzanne Fuquay, our new behavior and training director, Joanne Hanna from Santa Fe Tales, Deb Moody, Deborah Tolar, and Almudena Ortiz, who are just these astonishing people, and they believe in this project so much that they take time out of their businesses to do this for the shelter. And they're dynamite. They're some of the most expert people I've ever seen work with animals. Another segment of it is the New Hope program, which I get a little choked up when I talk about it because I think it's going to be such a monumental thing for the animals. We have had for many, many years a foster program, and this foster program has really helped a number of animals, but it's always been folded into other programs. We realize that so many of these animals that are in Project 18 are animals that need very particular attention. Again, it's that 10% of the animals that are going to need 50% of your time, but they're worth it. Despite the fact that the shelter is very utilitarian, the greatest good for the greatest number, we're at a point now where we can make those animals part of the greatest good and part of this greatest number on the way to 100%. So whether they need medical fosters, whether they need behavioral fosters with a family that can actually help them with a very particular behavior that the dog has, they leave the shelter with our behavior and training director's special protocol. They get the help they need outside of the shelter, which for some dogs can be a stressful environment.
The tickets are gone. You can stop calling, ladies and gentlemen.
That was fast, Mary Lynn. Good job. There are hospice fosters. That's a program that's dear to my heart. There are a number of animals, as our friend Ula Peterson has told us many times, that sort of get set aside simply because they're old.
Yeah.
Through our hospice foster program, when we get those animals into the shelter, we're increasingly able to put them into homes with people who understand that these animals are in their twilight moments. And they're able to be with a family right up until the end. And that, frankly,
well, I'll tell you, there's
beautiful.
Some dogs that are wonderful in the last couple of years of their lives. I've had 2 of those in my own life recently. And, you know, the thing about dogs, I don't know about, I'm sure cats are the same way. they just give it everything they got until they draw their last breath.
Absolutely. In fact, our very first hospice foster was this cat named Holmes, this wonderful Siamese mix. And he went to our very good friends, Joe Mowry and Janice St. Marie. And he lived, I think he probably went a couple of years, and that was one of the most brilliant, wonderful cats right up until the end. And they've got a new hospice cat that lives with them that these older animals have a place to go is really spectacular. And the New Hope program also helps new moms with puppies or kittens to get them to help those puppies or kittens stay with mom until they're big enough to go on their own, and then we can get everybody into a home.
Another thing that Ulla Peterson is so good about is educating people that when your animal gets old, that doesn't mean that you should give it away or get rid of it or abandon it, but rather learn to take care of it. So that's part of the whole picture, too.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that's at the core of Project 18 is really keeping these relationships intact. So we're dealing not just with the animals that come into the shelter, but we're trying to keep animals in homes where they are loved and where they love their families, but things are difficult. So with our behavior and training program, we're working to reach people who, before they get to a point where they feel like they have to give up their animal for these issues, that we can work with them and give them counseling and training and help them keep that animal in the family. I can't imagine how hard it is to have kids, but certainly having been one and being a problem child, both my brother and I think about the resources that were available to my folks to help them be better parents.
You were a problem child?
Oh, it's a terrible kid. Terrible
really?
Kid, Mary Charlotte.
No way.
Absolutely.
What kind of terrible?
The kind of terrible that the statute of limitations has not expired on, so I won't talk about it on the radio.
But that's a little scary. Okay,
no,
go ahead.
That might be an exaggeration for humor's sake, but I will neither confirm nor deny that. So if the resources that are available to a lot of parents to help them be good parents, to help their kids grow into good adults, are available, if we can make those available for animal parents as well, to help them with their dogs and their cats, to help make them happy and help give them structure and guidance in their life, to take problems like digging and chewing and barking and understand where that really comes from in the animal's mind and heart and address that, then you keep a family whole. And
what about
really
knocking
one of the most
over,
exciting
what about knocking over both the kitchen garbage and the garbage can outside the house?
Are you suggesting we do that?
No, how do you make them stop doing that? Which all my dogs have done 3 times in the last 3 days.
Well, I would think about where the placement of your garbage cans first and recognize that that in part you have terriers and of various stripes, and their destructive tendencies are numerous. Of course, we're going to get letters and calls now from the terrier contingent saying, how dare you?
The Terrier Anti-Defamation League?
That's right. T-A-D-L. But these are exactly the kind of questions that our spectacular behavior and training director, Suzanne, and her staff, Marianne and Mo and Kathy, are really going to be able to work with people. So if it's something that is really going to be an issue to the point where you give up and you bring your animal to the shelter or send it elsewhere, that we can help you find a way to keep it in the home. We know people love their dogs and cats. We know people want to keep them with them in the family. But we also recognize that life is very stressful in general, and when you've got a problem child in your dog or cat, you need to find a solution, and we want that solution to be to stay with the family, to keep the family together.
There was a wonderful book, and this sounds like a non sequitur, but it isn't, called River of Traps, which Bill Dubuis wrote when he was a young man who had just come to New Mexico in the 1970s, the photographer Alex Harris, and they profiled and wrote just a wonderful book about an old New Mexican man who was farming and using the acequias and living kind of in the old way. And one of the things that they wrote about was his relationship with his horse. To him, his horse was the equivalent of a truck. There was no sense that this was a living being that had emotional needs. He used it, abused it, didn't cry when it died. I mean, it was just a person-thing relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, you know, that we animal-spoiling animal welfare types look at that and say, oh, that's terrible. But, yeah, that is a part of a culture that is in many ways mostly gone. But I think the residue of that, I mean, one of my neighbors has this just cute little new dog who was tied on a string in front of his house, and the poor little dog barks whenever I go in and out, and sometimes I go pat it because it clearly needs attention. But I feel like, you know, this is that same. This is the next generation of that culture, which treats animals as guardians, and that's pretty much it.
You know, it's interesting. I think when you say that, I think about a couple of things. There's this idea of really mindfulness, and I think there are maybe back. I remember my grandfather talking about this, that he has come a long way in his own life and how he views animals. But I think even early on, when he was growing up in Paris, Texas, and the horse really was like the truck. You valued your truck. You kept it tuned up. You kept it running well. You kept it healthy. So if your horse, which was for my grandfather, you treated it well. You gave it the medical attention, the care that it needed. You didn't treat it callously because it was something that was a real part of your life. So if you see how these various mindsets then can grow into the kind of relationships we have now, where you value it for a different reason, perhaps less because it's something that helps you keep the farm alive, and more because this is actually a very dear friend whose welfare is in your hands. It still lets us keep that sort of mindful position of what's important and general caretaking and being aware of the lives that are around you and that you share. So whatever the reason, whether it's because it's an animal of utility or an animal of companionship, that while that perspective may grow, the need for care and understanding and addressing those needs, like these animals that are in Project 18 who variously live their lives on the end of chains or keep breeding unchecked or have behavioral issues that, I mean, it's fascinating. I think you've seen this with your dogs, and I've known various of your dogs for several years now, and they like us. They have very particular identities, but they don't want life to be completely undirected. They want some structure. They want to know that you're coming home. They want dinner at particular times. They have things that they like.
That time is all the time.
Right now.
That particular time.
What time is dinner? Right now, please. But we give them that structure. And for animals who don't have that structure, that frustration comes out in these different ways that I think as we slowly grow, as we've grown for the last 73 years of the shelter's existence into being where dogs are viewed as pests that you can simply put a bullet in and drag to the edge of town, to companions that are an integral part of our life, and slowly get that last very hard won but very necessary 18% into this community's heart.
You know, as you speak, what I'm realizing is that getting the 18% of animals into your heart basically on some level requires performing mass psychiatry on 18% of animal owners.
I think that's very true, and I think it's something that isn't going to be... The exciting thing, one of the many exciting things about Project 18 is not going to be necessarily that we're going to start doing something, but we're going to amplify something that's been a part of this community for a long time. There are days where I get very frustrated about the difficulty of working in animal welfare. And whenever we do that, I think back to the many, many generations of Santa Feans since 1939 who have made this work a part of their life, a part of their heart, something that means the world to them. And what those 73 years of people have done in this community is mind-boggling. It gives me goosebumps to think and to talk about it. So if you realize that, then that psychology, that change, that sea change in the perspective we have toward animals is so very possible.
Yeah, you're right.
We can do it. We absolutely can
do it. I suppose it's analogous to homophobia. I mean, when I was born, it was the norm, and now it's sort of the
it falls
lunatic
by the wayside.
Fringe.
I think about this when I watch Modern Family, one of my favorite shows, where you've got this magnificent gay couple with an adopted kiddo. And I think, you know, when I was growing up watching TV in the late 70s and 80s, you would not have seen such a thing. But perspectives change and the world changes. And we find ourselves recognizing that what we believed to be true yesterday is not always going to be something we find to be true tomorrow. One of the best things that we can do is when we recognize that positions we held were underinformed or not quite right, is to abandon them for ideas that do feel truer and better. And certainly animals are a key part of that. To go from my grandfather, who took good care of his horse but didn't give it a name and didn't really know much about its personality, to a situation where you and I and so many people in this community love their animals and know the idiosyncrasies of their personality and can can tell you so many strange things about how they live in this world.
To the point where people call you Crazy Dog Lady.
Absolutely. And I do enjoy calling you Crazy Dog Lady, but that comes from a crazy dog man. To realize that this is the case, that we learn more and more, not just in our hearts, but even scientifically, behaviorally, as we study animals and realize they have personalities, they have things that they like and care about and believe in, and to realize that, I often like to say at the shelter, you don't know until you know. And I think if you're that guy who's had his dog on a chain in the yard for many, many years, for many, many dogs, that you absolutely can wake up one day and look in that animal's eyes or look in that cat that's been living outside that you don't really care about and realize that is a creature who likes certain things, who has preferences, who cares about things, who has a personality, who has a heart. That is a profound and exciting moment, and it's a moment that this community has been experiencing in ever larger numbers for 3/4 of a century now.
I got an email a couple of days ago, I think it was yesterday or the day before, about this animal, which is an American Eskimo dog named Corley.
Adorable.
Who is, I think...
Let's hold the picture up to the microphone.
I think it's the single cutest thing I've ever seen. It looks like a white fluffy pillow with a black nose and black eyes and a big, huge, happy smile. And he is 7 years old. He's a rescue dog. He gently loves other dogs and cats. Not probably so good with children, but he is a rescue, wants a good home. He's all clean teeth and has his shots and all those good things. And has a little bit of post-traumatic stress, I guess, was abused at some point in her life. Oh, it was a girl. She was abused at some point in her life. But she's smart and sweet and funny. And so if you are interested in this American Eskimo dog, you can call Sandra at 983-6971. And if you didn't get a chance to write that down, you can write to me at radiocafe@ksfr.org.
It's interesting. Dogs like that, I think, are a particular part of the reason that the New Hope program that's a part of Project 18 is going to be so exciting. Along with working with these fosters, Kelly Moore, who is she was a volunteer coordinator at the shelter a while back, and she's come back just to do the New Hope program because I think she's really excited about it. We're very excited about it. But we recognize, along with the fosters, there are breed-specific animals who need things that are different than, say, the average New Mexico brown dog. So she's in the process of forging relationships with rescue groups throughout the region to place these particular animals, like an American Eskimo dog, that has very particular personality traits that while each dog has its own being, that there are certain things throughout the breed that people who are involved in these breed-specific rescues are really eager and able to take on. I worked recently with Dobie Rescue in Albuquerque, and they are a stunning, loving group of people who know Dobermans inside and out. So by taking these troubled animals who are often overbred or suffer from health issues, etc., and partnering with these organizations, these beautiful dogs, like this gorgeous Eskimo dog, can, through the New Hope program and other systems, really find their way into the situation that they need. Each animal is an individual animal. We like to say that we help 10,000 animals a year, but we do it one animal at a time.
They're individual animals, but as you say, they've got breed-specific characteristics. For example, border collies, they need a full set of encyclopedias.
All the times. And you need to make sure that with border collies, with cattle dogs, with Jack Russell Terriers, you never, ever leave your car keys out. They will absolutely steal your car and take it and joyride.
And your credit cards.
Oh, yes. Keep them up on a high shelf and don't have any stools around.
No. I mean, the pizza delivery that came to my house 7 years ago was out of control.
Absolutely. I remember when Milk and Honey went on that cruise line. I think it was Pink Floyd was doing one of their sea cruises, and Milk and Honey, who are both big Pink Floyd fans, stole Mary Charlotte's credit card and went on a 10-day cruise.
Jam Cruise 2000.
I don't think you were ever the same. They were doing howling Dark Side of the Moon for weeks after they got back.
They told me they did not do any illicit drugs, and I believe them.
Because they're responsible. You raised them right, Mary Charlotte. That's why they're in the 82%.
We've been talking to Bill Hutchison, who is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. And, of course, you've got wonderful dogs up for adoption, whom we can't talk about now, but we'll talk about them. We'll talk about them every time you come. Normally we do. We just don't have time right now, so people can just go to the...
Check them out on our website.
Yeah.
All our adoptable critters are on our website.
Pictures. And
little descriptions to give you a sense of who they are. sfhumanesociety.org. Check it out, friends.
And since we couldn't do Speaking of the Arts, I'll just give you one or two little teasers, and that is that 18 days at the CCA continues tonight. There's a poetry panel with Renee Gregorio, Lauren Camp, Joan Logie, and Elaine Maria Upton. And then tomorrow, there's a play, Bronwyn Denton Davis, wonderful playwright, doing new theatrical work. And another play on Sunday, Rosemary Zebart, doing a two-character play called Adulation. So that's 18 days. And we, let's see, I got a note that the Tribute Trio is going to be playing tomorrow night a Herbie Hancock tribute in at the historic old San Ysidro Church in Corrales, which is a wonderful place. That's 7:30 tomorrow night.
Herbie Hancock, one of the great signers of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, and his cousin John also. National Craft Month Bead Fest is going on here in New Mexico, March 10th, which is yesterday, through the 13th. So for more information, you can just look at, well, facebook.com/beadfest, or you can just go to beadfest.com. And the Pueblo de Abiquiu Library is having a read-a-thon on Sunday. Oh, and there's so much more. The Dodos are playing on Monday at Warehouse 21. I've gotten about 4,000 emails from them.
Catch them before they're extinct. They are slow and easy to pursue.
Jane Sauer Contemporary Art is having a show called Inner and Outer Space, The Visionary Landscapes of Josh Simpson, who is an artist whom I happen to know, actually, very, very cool stuff, who works with glass. The Brazil Project at Vernon's in Albuquerque, got that from Bert Dalton, playing tonight at 8:30. And, oh, so much more. But anyway, we don't have time to go into it all. We will be back next week with Rob DeWalt, Speaking of the Arts. And once again, Bill Hutcherson, it's just great to have you.
Couldn't think of a better way to spend my morning.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, then jazz. And I've got a question for my listeners. You can either go to facebook.com/radiocafe and write me a comment, or you can write me an email, radiocafe@ksfr.org, and tell me the following. Do you use Twitter? And if so, what do you get out of it? I want to know. I don't use Twitter, but I've been told I should. Anyway, bye.
9 a.m. in Santa Fe. These stories coming up from KSFR News. A state Senate bill that would help homeowners avoid suddenly high real estate taxes is making its way through the state house. Both of New Mexico's U.S. senators want the Valles Caldera National Preserve to be managed by the National Park Service. And a bill that would create state loans to assist independent New Mexico filmmakers for small budget productions has met with House approval.